Speaking of Eastern Europe, I wanted to ask you, you made your film in Transylvania. How did you find a relationship towards you as someone coming from a different cultural background?
I think with the actors, they were always okay. They were curious, you know, what is this Englishman doing? What is he trying to say about our culture? I mean, the thing is that I was not trying to say anything about their culture. The film is a film. It could happen anywhere. I just needed this location. The hardest thing was with the extras in the villages and to get permission to use these places, because it's Transylvania, so they have no... It's not Bucharest, where people are very media aware, so they have no idea of what's going on. So you just have to be very, very respectful, and you can't just come in and do it the city way, where you just say, here's the money and book it. I remember going back again and again and again. You have to talk to the priest, you have to talk to so-and-so, and sometimes you can't even get a phone number. You have to just say, okay, that's the way it is, come back. But it was fine. Again, a lot of luck involved, but we had a lot of time on our hands because the money came from me. I had 2.5 years prior to shooting to just do homework. I mean, I knew if you're going to make a film, the whole budget of the film was 100,000 euro, but the shooting and editing budget was 30,000 euro. So 70,000 euro was for the 35mm blow up and the sound, the extra sound. So I just thought, okay, we have 30,000 euro. We could never do the film on that money if we go to a service producer, which is what you normally do. They take care of everything for you. So I just thought, okay, I have 2.5 years. My boss in my job was very generous. He allowed me 1 week every month to go to Romania. So we just did everything ourselves, just all the homework, all the preparation. So it was a beautiful time. It would never happen again. It was a very different time. I was younger, I was single. I couldn't do it now. All those train journeys to Transylvania. I remember my suit just stank of the train after 2 years, but it just has this kind of train aroma. It's not like the German trains.
From where actually came the motive of making a film of Katalin Varga, who is in a way also a historical figure. She was a leader in the 19th century. She led...
Communist leader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And whether it is connected to the figure, the main protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. I had no idea. I didn't even know until after shooting. I mean, Katalin Varga is actually a very common name in Hungary, former Hungary. I chose that name because it was very... I liked Fassbinder's titles. They always had female names, Veronica Voss, Lili Marleen. So, and it sounded very exotic to English people, but to Hungarians it's very common, so we had to change the title in Hungarian. But originally it was going to be called Katalin Varga, but the English couldn't pronounce it. It'd say Vajda. It would sound awful. So, but no, I think Katalin was totally fictitious. To me, she was coming from opera. Janáček, Katia Kabanova, or Greek tragedy, Medea. Mm. It's no relation to anything in terms of real life.
Can we take her as a synonym for the oppressed to resist, let's say, the masters?
I never saw it that way. If someone sees it that way, that's fine. For me, the motivation behind the film was to kind of provoke the audience in terms of their own perception of morality, and for me to just keep away from it and not give my judgment. So I'm letting nature take its course. So you're expecting this rapist to be an evil man, like in most films, and then suddenly he's a gentleman. And some people were very angry. They're just, how can you show? It's people were accusing me of being irresponsible to show a man who did something so terrible like this. But that's life. I mean, we see war criminals who have massacred thousands of people, but they find them 10 years later or 50 years later, and they have families, they're not out on the street with a knife all the time. It's that's life, and this idea of judgment, from whose point of view are we talking about? And within a film, you have so many different points of view to consider, the filmmaker's point of view, the characters, the audience. So I wanted to just kind of provoke people a little bit, throw this question out about, because if I made that film from the point of view of the man who kills Katalin at the end, it would be a happy ending. If we made the film totally from his life, he never knows why Katalin killed his brother-in-law. So, it's... My opinion is not relevant in this at all.
I got this feeling that is also connected, in a way, with folk tales, especially due to the use of the sound and music, and also the scenes of nature. So, is there any connection?
Yeah, no, there is definitely. There's something about folklore I always liked, which is something. There's something that you can't anchor it in time. It's something that goes on and on. I think a lot of it was just also texture. It has this amazing evocative quality. I loved Parajanov. His stuff in Armenia and the Ukraine. He was always using singing. And I just felt that wasn't being done so much in modern cinema, to have characters singing. And the songs almost mirror what's happening in the film, this kind of imagery with wolves and blood and milk. So,
forest, for instance.
The forest, sorry, I forgot the biggest thing, the forest, yeah.
Also, I wanted to ask you about the forest. In a way, it's also, well, obviously a place of crime, and also, in a way, what do you think about the mythical status of forests, and also in the relation to her subconscious, and also in relation to the past, because the past here is, for me, also an important factor, because the past always comes to get you.
Well, for me, the forest is also a place of refuge. And it is for Kotelin when she's on the lake, and when she describes how she was on her own after the men left. It is a place of comfort. The animals come to protect her. So it is this double world where it is a place of menace and danger. And also, I mean, for me, actually, on a personal level, I love forests. I'm a big nature fan, and I never saw them as dark or scary. I mean, to me, the streets in London, they are... That's where the real horror is. Obviously, I am playing with film myth. It's been there, but not in terms of horror. More in terms of this gothic atmosphere. And I was a big fan of Tarkovsky and Herzog, especially. He really brought up this gothic mythology to the forests, whether it's the rainforests in Nagira or Nosferatu.
It's funny that you mentioned Herzog, because when I was watching the film, especially because of the use of sound and music, it reminded me instantly on the Encounters of the End of the World.
I saw that just now. Well, I saw it in November, actually, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because of the Requiem songs, you know, and also his fascination with nature. Well, my second question also is how, in a way, nature here is used like a narrator.
Seems like a narrator, but also it is this very brutal backdrop to the film where you hear these sounds of crickets, and for me it's very beautiful, but if you analyse the sound, what they're saying is, this is my territory and don't you go near it, and they're using it to attract women. It's all about sex and territory, and the film is kind of in that strange border. And so, yeah, on one level it's very lyrical and very beautiful, but I didn't want to make it ugly, but I wanted to have this sense that nature is a force. It's not a postcard thing. And in a way, the weather was so nice when we were filming. We were hoping it would be a bit uglier. But I think... But at the same time, I wanted that elevation. It's a very ugly story. So it needed something lyrical to lift it above something which is very, very graphic. And I didn't want to show blood.
A lot of the story is actually made, let's say, in... of imaginary of the viewer, like quote, this scene that you wrote, I thought that it was marvelous, because you are constructing it in your, let's say...
Yeah. Well, to me, cinema is... It belongs... A film... 100% of the film is not on the screen. I say 80%. 20% is in the audience's head. And if you're giving the audience everything, they're not active, they're not working. I think for a film to work, the audience have to be active. And I wanted to do that scene, people were very against it. They said it's boring, it's, you know, you shouldn't do that. You're just showing they were saying, show images, not dialogue. You're just showing a head. And I said, no, you just go with it. Because it's so relentless that the audience will eventually get their own thing. Like, people wanted flashbacks for this. I said, no way, no flashbacks. Just, if we made that film commercially, we would have so much pressure to change it. But, sound is much more powerful in terms of propagating a reaction. I mean, the classic example is, if you look at a photograph of your ex-lover, or you smell the perfume or a pillow of your ex-lover, the smell is much stronger. it just hits you much harder than just an image. I mean, I think sight is actually it's the strongest form of recollection we have, but also it's the weakest because our senses are not working. Everything is there for us. So I think for cinema to work, you have to just not give everything.
In a way, it functions like literature because, for instance, the use of moon.
The moon. It was such a bad moon.
But it was great because its shape. You could anticipate what's going to happen. In a way, it functions like Oscar Wilde's moon.
I'm very happy with that for sure. Yeah, no, it's when I'm writing, film is only a fraction of my influence. So many things come into a film when you're writing. Real life, of course, but also. Literature, music. I mean, music is a huge part of my.
I also got an award at the Berlin Festival for the sound.
That was good, but that moon was so bad. It was. Whenever I see a moon in other films, I always get jealous because they will shoot it better than what we did. We just had no time to get this good moon. But anyway.
And how long did the post production took you?
2.5 years. It was terrible. That was the worst part because shooting was actually very straightforward. 17 days to shoot it, and we all lived together in the same house. We have very good memories of this. But then you go home, everyone goes off back to their world or acting and theatre. You just have this physical weight on your shoulders, and that's the hardest part as a director. It's very lonely because everyone's moved on, and no one's interested. Okay, now after this year, people are interested. You never know, next year, whatever. But when they're not interested, my God, they're not interested. I'd be going to meetings to see producers, and they wouldn't even look at 1 minute because it was in a foreign language. It was self-funded. No. It's incredible. That's the hardest thing, I think, to make films. You have to just say, right, this is how it's going to be. Just prepare yourself.
It's nothing romantic about it.
Well, shooting was romantic, but afterwards, no. There's nothing romantic about sitting in your bedroom on your own thinking, what do I do now? And I think it would be one day of editing, because I didn't have enough money to pay the editor a competitive fee. So he would always do advertising work for more money. So I'd lose him for a week, sometimes a month. Then he'd do 2 days. And so the whole post-production was 3 months. But spread over 2.5 years. And the longest gap was 8 months. 8 months of doing nothing. So I went back to my mother's house, got a job. And that's... working is actually the nice part of making a film. That's fun. Working is great. I think the most... It's unlike having jobs. Because most jobs, when you're not working, that's the fun part. But film, when you're not working, that's the torture. The waiting and waiting and waiting. But we were lucky. We were just very, very lucky because there are many people who work very hard and do very good films. They just don't get that lucky break because producers and distribution companies have DVD stacks up here and no one has the time to watch them. So there could be many works of genius lying there. It's luck, sadly.
In a way, it's connected to your film because there are these concepts of destiny.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it gives you also a sense of like noir when people are just thrown into a situation and they actually don't know how to react. It's like again time image. But here, Kathleen, she then reacts to the fact that her husband knows her tragic situation. And I wanted to ask you, would she also react in this way? Whether, of course, her closest wouldn't know about her.
No, for me, no. I think she, in my mind, she put everything behind her. She had a good husband, son, just normal life in society. But as soon as she lost that, she thinks, okay, well, I've got nothing to lose now. Let's do what I always secretly wanted to do. No, I think she would have never done it if the secret hadn't come out. No.